Hello, everyone. My name is Pablo Siqueiros, and I'm the teaching artist at Minnesota Opera. And I'm here to talk to you about one of the most well-known operas of all time, Verdi's La Traviata. The last time that Minnesota Opera produced La Traviata was in May of 2019. Now, earlier that season, I gave the pre-performance talk for the opera La Rondine by Puccini. If you were there for that one, you might remember that this was an opera that opens in Paris at a party at the home of a high-end courtesan who is betrothed to a wealthy suitor. She then meets a handsome tenor, and they run away to live in the countryside. And although things were going well, she decides to leave him because she doesn't want her past to create any problems for him and his family. Now today, we're talking about the opera La Traviata, which opens in Paris at a party at the home of a high-end courtesan who is betrothed to a wealthy suitor. She then meets a handsome tenor, and they run away to live in the countryside. And although things were going well, she decides to leave him because she doesn't want her past to create any problems for him and his family. But in this one, she dies at the end, so it's totally different. But in all seriousness, here we have two operas by two of the most well-known and beloved opera composers of all time, with a story that's almost identical. Yet in the past year, La Traviata received 208 productions around the world, while La Rondine had 5. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say that it has to do with the quality of the operas themselves. Even the less popular Puccini opera is still Puccini. It's like pizza, even bad pizza is still pizza. But I think it had a little more to do with when and how these operas came about. So to understand more of that, let's go back to the beginning. Giuseppe Verdi is arguably one of the greatest Italian composers of all time. Audiences are drawn to his work, singers love performing his work. There's a unique quality to Verdi's operas that even the composers that came before him, like Donizetti of Don Pasquale and Elixir of Love, recognized his potential from a young age. And to have that kind of stamp of approval was a big deal. Like many composers of that time, Verdi started his musical journey by studying at the local music schools, and had a mentor who taught him as much as he could until there was no more to teach him. He then went on to become a music director at a local church, then became an orchestra director, and then he shifted his focus primarily to composing. And that's when life got a little more interesting for him. His earlier operas like Nabucco, Ernani, I Lombardi tended to be of epic scale and had strong political undertones. Even though many of the stories of his operas were set in different countries and in different time periods, he was often commenting on the politics and social issues of Italy at that time. And that commentary came through especially clear in his use of the chorus. Now, we don't often get to talk about the chorus in these talks, but in his operas, the role of the chorus was so important. It was the voice of the people. Not just the people on stage, but the people outside the theater as well. Verdi lived in Italy during a very tumultuous time, when many of Italy's territories were under Austrian rule. There were many people who were calling for the reunification of these territories, in what became known as the Risorgimento, or the Resurgence. During the Risorgimento, those who were for the reunification of Italy latched on to Verdi's music, which often spoke of national pride in overthrowing those in power. That music resonated so much that the chorus for the opera Nabucco, the famous Va Pensiero chorus, became almost an unofficial national anthem during this time. In that chorus, the words speak of a country that is beautiful but lost, beloved yet unhappy, and pleads to the gods to rekindle the spirit of what the country once was. I mean, who wouldn't feel fired up after that? But then later in his career, we get this opera, La Traviata, which has no strong political agenda, no overthrow of the government, no murder, no battles, none of the exciting elements that made his earlier operas so successful. Many people, including those in the original cast, thought that this would be a flop because it seemed to not carry any sort of historical significance. It was dismissed as simply a domestic tragedy. But for Verdi, it was different, in that he saw a bit of his own life playing out in this story. Now, this opera is based on a play by Alexandre Dumas titled The Lady of the Camellias, which was based on a novel, which was based on a true story. Verdi and his soon-to-be wife, Giuseppina Strepponi, saw this play when it was first premiered, and they loved it. So much so that Verdi immediately got to work in making it into an opera. Strepponi was a famous soprano who had premiered several of Verdi's operas, along with operas of other well-known composers. He and Strepponi had been living together as an unmarried couple for some time. She'd also had several children out of wedlock in other relationships, which gave her and her relationship to Verdi an unfortunate reputation in their small conservative community. This sparked some extra motivation for Verdi to write La Traviata and show the virtues of a woman with experiences outside of the social norms of that time. So he gets to work on this opera, and he's writing, and he's perfecting it, and he's adding details. Eventually, it starts taking shape, and then he gets hit with a bombshell. The impresario wants to select the cast. If you're a composer, chances are, if you're writing an opera, you have a certain voice in your head for these characters, and maybe an idea of what they might look like. You might even have specific singers in mind who could perform these roles. Well, the cast that the impresario chose were neither of these things. But Verdi didn't have a choice but to work with what he had. He complained about the abilities of this cast and even questioned whether having this cast at the premiere would endanger the long-term prosperity of this piece. But alas, he trudged on. Now, being that this was based on a modern play, Verdi thought it seemed appropriate to set this opera in current time and using modern dress. And keep in mind, we're talking about the 1850s, when showing an ankle was considered outrageous. So everything is moving along fine, and he gets a note from the censors that they won't allow him to perform the opera in modern dress. That since the opera has to do with quote-unquote amoral domestic behavior, that having the opera in modern dress might encourage people in the audience to engage in this behavior when they leave the theater. And Verdi's like, oh, come on. I'm sure for him it was also a public disapproval of his own quote-unquote amoral domestic behavior. So he says, fine. And he decides to set the opera 100 years earlier so people weren't seduced by temptation. But this wasn't the first time that Verdi had a run-in with the censors. When Verdi was writing Rigoletto, based on the Victor Hugo play Le Roi s'amuse, or The King Amuses Himself, the censors were already planning on banning it before it even went up, calling it a quote-unquote a repugnant example of immorality and obscene triviality. So again, Verdi obliged. The original King of France became the Duke of Mantua. A few scenes were deleted altogether, and the action revolved around the hunchback now named Rigoletto. His opera Un ballo in maschera endured changing character names and locations several times. It went from taking place in Stockholm to then Poland to finally landing in Boston during the colonial era. His most frustrating experience with the censors, however, came with his opera Stifelio, which underwent so many changes that Verdi angrily withdrew from all performances and the original score was presumably lost until it was recently found in 1993. I mentioned earlier that his early operas were very political, but how he got away with it was by setting them in different countries, by switching the names of the characters. This way, he was able to comment on the turmoil in Italy during this time while masking it as an unrelated story. Now, all this talk of censorship and evasion got me thinking about a few questions. What then is the role of art in society? Is it to bring comfort and affirm? Is it to provoke and question? Is it to explore and expand our understanding of humanity? I think that answer has evolved over the years, and I'm sure it's probably different for everyone who's listening right now. There have been times in history in which the only art that was allowed was that which conformed to the societal norms of that time. It had to follow a certain set of unspoken rules in order to be legitimate. And is that really all that different than how art is perceived today? For many people who don't come to the theater, opera is often perceived as the most traditional, the safest, the most unprovocative of art forms. And frankly, there are many times when I wouldn't disagree with that perception. If you compare opera productions in the US to some of the productions that you might see in Europe, ours are very safe. We tend to stay away from anything that's too political, too controversial, too risque. A part of that has to do with what audiences here want to see. Part of that also has to do with content regulations behind funding for the arts. But who decides what is quote-unquote too political, too controversial, or too risque? What are those assessments based on, and whose set of moral values are determining that threshold? Just some food for thought. Now, Verdi's music is a favorite for many singers. The way that Verdi wrote his operas shows that he truly understood how the voice works and showcased the best qualities of the singers he worked with. However, notice how I didn't say that it was easy to sing. In La Traviata, the role of Violetta is brutally difficult to sing because of what is happening dramatically. In the first act, she's joyous, bubbly, and free, so she sings very high and has a lot of coloratura passages, or moments of rapid moving notes. In the second act, she goes through a roller coaster of emotions, including heartbreak, so she sings much more dramatically and with more power. In the last act, she's sick and physically weak, so her voice needs to sound as such while still carrying in the theater. The sopranos that are able to perform this role well definitely earned that ovation at the end. Violetta, however, is not the only one that gets show-stopping arias in this opera. Other moments to take note of are Germont's aria, Di Provenza, Il Mar, Il Suol, and Alfredo's aria, De Miei Bolenti Spiriti, which features one of Verdi's signature cavalettas, a faster section of music that usually has the singer going high, fast, and sometimes with the added force of the chorus. So to wrap things up here, I want to leave you with this question that I asked earlier. In your opinion, what is the role of art in society? To comfort? To question? Or perhaps like Verdi thought, to bring people together through difficult times. Thank you again for joining us for this primer of Verdi's opera, La Traviata.